Welcome to AI Today. I'm your host, Dr. Alan Badeau, and I want to ask you something. When was the last time you checked your phone? Hour ago, 20 minutes, 5 minutes, a minute? Maybe you're waiting on something to load? Maybe. Another question. When's the last time your phone checked on you? We don't think about it that way, do we? That kind of shifts things and makes you rethink a little bit all the AI technology that is out there today that you may not even be thinking about. And, you know, as we shift a little bit to think about, you know, what we're living through right now and, you know, how we've spent the last 10, 15 years carrying around, you know, devices that really demand our attention. And, you know, what's going to happen in the next 15 years? Are we going to be doing things that, you know, and using more AI wearables, for example, that are paying more attention to us? And I'm not talking about, you know, the distant science fiction, you know, future. I'm talking about, you know, a $200 billion market that exists right now. And it can be strapped to your wrists, it can be clipped to your ears, or it can be sitting right on your face. You know, as you look at the numbers, because really, like always, what do we say? Always follow the numbers, right? It's almost impossible to believe, but, you know, the wearable technology market is, you know, $200 billion as of today. And that's not a projection. It's where we are. It's the environment that we're living in right now. And with Christmas coming out, I got a lot of questions about, oh, you know, what kind of technology is great? What do we have to worry about? You know, should I get this? Should I get that? You know, and I thought this would be a good show, you know, considering, you know, Cyber Monday was right, you know, just a day ago. It's going to be interesting when we take a step back and we're looking at these things and we, you know, we hear huge numbers that are going to be even bigger than, you know, what we're seeing today. And it's, they're saying that $200 billion market is going to at least triple in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years. That's crazy. That's a crazy amount of technology that is just getting embedded as we go along. You know, it used to be the old saying was, if, you know, a technology made it into a video game, then it had arrived, right? If it made it into kitchenware, it had arrived. And, you know, I've seen AI embedded in rice cookers, for example, for almost 4 years. And so I knew it was only a matter of time. And we've played with the watches and we played with all those other things, but, you know, as the technology has matured, the segments and the markets are just growing so fast. And it was only a matter of time before the wearables really started to, you know, to dominate. And if you think about, you know, we'll generalize a little bit on, you know, what we're defining as a wearable, but it's really around, you know, sensors on your body and using AI to process the information that those sensors receive. And it can be your phone with, you know, Apple Health. It can be your watch. It can be something in your shoe. It can be on your clothes. It can be your glasses. Like I said, there's a lot of different things that it can be. And, you know, if you take a slice of that market and you just look at even the glasses market per se, you know, they're saying even by, you know, 2030 that $130 billion just for the glasses. And that's kind of surprising, right? Because you think, oh, you know, it's so, you know, we've come a long way. It's at least, you know, it doesn't hurt your nose per se. It's coming, you know, it's coming down the pike, but now we've got changeable lenses with the Meta stuff. There's so many different things and so many other, you know, areas that it can really help. And that's what we're going to talk about, because I've been looking at and paying attention to these tech things for a while. And, you buy a pair of glasses, you don't think anything of it. However, we've got some showcases and some things that folks should learn from. Google Glass, remember all the fitness trackers and, where they were put, and your watch, and you couldn't wear a watch on if you were in the military because it would track your location, all these other things, right? And it seems like we may be forgetting some of those lessons of the past. Now, I don't have the answers to all this, but if you think about it, the right question comes down to, if you were to formulate one, it really comes down to three things. It's going to be what the capability is going to be around whatever the wearable is, how it's going to integrate, and how are you going to protect the data that comes from that, and how are those things going to interplay, and then necessity. Do we need it or do we want it? It's kind of like in sports, are you hurt or are you injured, right? With wearables, it's do you need it or do you want it? So let's think about the first capability really quick, and we'll talk about that. But in 2015, that's really when it started to take off, because there were mirrors, there were a whole bunch of things, and we knew about the phone, the phone and its ability to track you, and then all the other devices that you could connect to it, and medical is definitely in the lead from that perspective. But it was really, it could detect heart arrhythmias. It could, look at other things, sugar spikes, for example, and even sleep disorders. You've got to watch, you've got to look at, it'll track your signals and your breathing and all those other things. And it can say, oh yeah, they've got a sleep disorder or something like that. But now the sensors are even getting better. It's taking more data. It's getting more information from you. And so as it's doing that, as batteries are even lasting longer, that processing power starts to really take over. And people may not be thinking that their devices are collecting more information than maybe they were anticipating. If you think about, just do a quick comparison, the processing power for most wearables now is even farther advanced than a laptop was 10 years ago. That should be an eye opener, because that's a lot of processing power and a lot of ability to collect a lot of information. Now, the second thing I want everybody to think about is really, like I said, around the integration piece. If, early on, we saw what some of the issues were, right? Google Glass was an interesting one. The belts, right? Remember the belts that you would wear, and you could hook things on it and it would track you. And there's just a whole bunch of things that were out there. And those were kind of, a lot of people want to forget those. They were kind of like islands and stuff. But now it's not like that anymore. Everything is being integrated together. And so now you're having different wearables become part of a larger ecosystem. And your smartwatch can talk to your phone. It can talk to, the car. It can talk to your house. It can talk to your refrigerator, whatever. The milk is spoiled and, sends you something to your glasses that says, oh yeah, the milk is spoiled. The grocery store, you should get some more. Okay. But that intelligence starts to compound, starts to add up. And, one device that is a novelty potentially connected to a whole bunch of other devices then becomes a basic infrastructure that you have that can track everything that you're doing. And that makes people a little bit nervous. Now, the third one, again, necessity. Okay. So we know that COVID-19 really changed everything from, telemedicine to, just wearing different types of devices and masks and all those things in between, because it was no longer a convenience to go, participate in a medical visit and do it telemedicine. It was a necessity. And it really started to change the thought process around that, because it was a survival strategy. Now, the pandemic, we know it compressed an awful lot of things, and adoptions around these sort of technologies from usually what happens around a 10-year cycle to about 18 months. And folks that had never even considered that sort of thing really just started to say, okay, you know what? I've got to have something that's going to track my oxygen levels, my heart rate, my temperature, those kind of things. And now they've just kept wearing them because they got used to it. So when you take all of that and you put all that data together and you start to look at the implications around that, then you start to see it's pretty easy that the wearable market is really it's fragmenting in some ways to more specialized tools for specialized purposes, but those fragments are growing at a huge pace and it's creating their own markets. And it's easier to give you an example. So if you think about the smart ring, right? The smart ring market was what, 4 years ago, I think. And today they're saying it's going to be $10 billion by 2030. That's a category that went from 0 to 10 billion in less than a decade. And that's just for rings. That's the Oura ring, a whole bunch of other things that are out there. Very popular Christmas gift from what I've seen. So, as you start to frame it and look at it from that perspective, we are witnessing really, I hesitate a little bit to call it a smartphone moment, but it's pretty close. Now, remember what it was like before you had a smartphone. Maybe you had a bag phone, one of those large cell phones that was about this big, right? Whatever that is. That whole consolidation took a long time, and it really took, Apple to release that smartphone, and then the market exploded, right? And we are on the verge of seeing that very thing with wearables. And so I want you to think about that convergence. We talk about traditional AI and convergence. Well, now I want you to think about the convergence of AI with these sort of capabilities with the wearables. And I want you to think, okay, as the maturity of the technology grows, as it scales, the more investment, more breadth of applications that go with that, there is a tailwind that will always come. And the revolution of wearables is, it's not coming, it's already here. And so the big question that we have is, how big is it going to get? How fast is it going to get there? And what impact is that going to have on your life? So I want you to think about that. Stay with us. We'll be back and we're going to dive in a little bit deeper into the wearables and, after a few short messages from our sponsors. Welcome back to AI Today. I'm your host, Dr. Alan Badeau, and we are talking about wearable devices, devices that have AI embedded in them that can be used to track a whole lot of information. And, as you think about it, when most people think about wearables, they think about their smartwatch, right? Maybe it's an Apple Watch, maybe it's a Garmin, maybe it's a Fitbit, maybe it's a Sony, whatever that is. But it's something that, is on your wrist and can count steps, and it can buzz you when there's a notification. You can pay for it, things with the, your watch, and the sensor, and that image is, it's not wrong, right? But it's just radically incomplete. And I think that's going to surprise a lot of people, though, but it is radically incomplete. And, 2025 going into Christmas, the wearable landscape really is everything that's obvious to the invisible. It's from, a consumer that is going to a clinic to maybe some sort of something that you're gonna strap on your head that will just allow it to measure more accurately your body temperature and your maybe it can really be just about anything. And so we're gonna look at that landscape because understanding what wearable means now is really essential to understanding where the technology is going and what that impact is going to be. Now, think about if as we start with the category that everybody knows, we'll do smartwatches and fitness bands to start. That's the largest segment, clearly. But glasses are coming. They're coming. But we'll stay focused on the smartwatch area for now. Apple Watch, you see it all the time. It's out there. It integrates so easily with your phone that it is, of course, leading the way. And it's on, wrists pretty much every country in the world. And then you start to see that, okay, Samsung is starting to catch up. Garmin, Fitbit, Huawei, a whole bunch of other ones are starting to compete, right? And so it's starting to really become more commoditized. And that isn't because of just the hardware, but it's also because of what the devices can do. It's very similar to, your computer hardware or anything else like that. If you don't have software that can integrate those things and that can allow it, that data to be collected and analyzed and then disseminated out, you're not going to have a smartwatch per se. And the early ones, geez, it was kind of tough because it would come in, come out, come in, come out. You'd have to leave your phone. You'd have to do a whole bunch of other things. You don't have that anymore. In some cases, smartwatches can even be certified medical devices. The new Apple Watch can take an electrocardiogram. It can detect atrial fibrillation and even your oxygen levels and stuff. And that's crazy, right? I know that, there are some that they're starting to look at blood pressure and being able to track your blood pressure and some of those things, but those are not too far away. And fitness bands are the same. Your step counters, the things that you have in your shoes, all tracking your performance, all tracking your health, all looking at things, from sleep to exercise to eating to you name it. There is a key thing I want folks to think about. Remember, we talked about need and integration and stuff, but now the watch is even starting to become a platform, not just a device, because you can connect so many things just to the watch, even. The wrist, if you think about it from a real estate perspective, it may not be. It may not be Boardwalk, but it is Park Place. A lot of advertisements go into the wrist market, right? And so, the value and the ability to continue to build on that is tremendous. Now, the smart rings. Let's dive in real quick with the smart rings because these sort of things fascinate me because they're mainstream. Companies like the Aura and Samsung, for example, a whole bunch of startups, your mood rings and stuff like that. There are some unique advantages to those, right? Because you're wearing a ring, it's not as obtrusive. You don't have the same sort of screen demand attention. It's just there. It may change colors, but it's just there. And so, your fingers are excellent place though to measure certain biometrics, right? Blood flow, temperature, movement during sleep, all those kind of things. And companies like Aura have really started to say, hey, you know what? We're going to take advantage of that. And we're going to take our device and we're going to specialize it and it's going to look at sleep optimization. So you want to wear it to bed? That's great. Tracks your sleep stages. Looks at your heart rate. looks at your temperature while you're sleeping. And then it gives you your, I thought this was really interesting, a daily readiness score. That's pretty good, because now you're looking at things like if you're an athlete, if you're an executive, if you are a biohacker, right? You can embrace that and you can say, okay, what if I change certain things, I'm going to be able to improve my readiness score. Who doesn't want to improve their readiness score, right? Sounds great. Samsung's following in. It's a mass market opportunity for them. And they're seeing it as they can take all their other Samsung devices and they can start to bring those in too. Because that's what everybody wants to do, right? You want to just keep growing and growing. You don't want an Apple Watch with a Samsung phone and it's loyalty and things like that. And so, they're taking advantage of that. Now, as you move into different parts of the body, you start thinking, oh, smart clothing, smart textiles. Yeah. Smart textiles is something that is it's fascinating to me because, I have thought that the shirts, the compression shirts, the winter shirts, a lot of things that Under Armour, Nike, and those folks have been doing for a long time, those have been gaining traction. And they've been weaving it into shirts and sports bras and socks and all those other things so it can do the same sort of thing. It can monitor your performance, your health, your muscle activity, and even movement patterns. Now, the advantage, of course, is covering more of your body. The watch, just one spot. A shirt, though, can monitor your entire torso. That matters, though, when you're looking at things like, cardiac rehab or your athletic performance and even workplace safety. And I think, folks should pay attention to that because that is coming. And there are companies right now that are looking at some of those things, especially like Hexoskin, for example, or Athos. Those are some athletic brands that are entering the market and they're bringing this small, niche, what we think is niche capability to professional sports and even medical applications, which is amazing. Now, smart glasses, I am going to talk a little bit about them, right? Because it's something that, of course, I had to get a pair. But you start to look at it and you say, okay, there are some potential ways that you can interact now with data, with certain types of analysis, and even your daily, friends and discussions activities that we haven't been able to do before. It is fundamentally changing a lot of things. These are the Meta glasses, of course. They're not very big, right, and stuff, and they're pretty outstanding. But you're wearing them in public now. Before, I would never have worn these smart glasses in public, and these actually turn into sunglasses. You can take photos, you can do all those other things. But now, is the red light on? That's a big question now for people. Are they being taped without knowing it? And is the consumer now, a little bit more advanced, a little bit more weary about something like that? Because now you're not only monitoring yourself, you're monitoring potentially somebody else. And that makes a lot of people nervous. And Apple and Meta and Microsoft, they all have their own that are doing that. And why? Because the spatial computing platforms really is what they are. It allows you to mix that digital content with the physical space. And then the market is really, talk about taking off. It's going to be huge. Now, as we're looking at these things, right, there are even more emerging capabilities that are small today, but they are going to be huge tomorrow. And we're not thinking about some of the things, implantables, right? Wrists implantables, smart tattoos as another example, pet wearables, for goodness sakes. I did not realize that the pet wearable market was going to be $100 million by 2030. But People love dogs, right? Love cats. So as you're pulling these things together, as you're putting more sensors on your body, whether it's a human body, whether it's your animal, think about some of the psychological impacts and the signals that are going into that data. There's form factor data, there's purpose, the purposes may differ, the data flows are going to be different. But when you triangulate all that information and you're instrumenting your body, then there are downstream ramifications that folks need to be prepared for. Your digital identity is one of them. We always talk about your digital identity, but the implications to that are going to be huge. And we're just at the early chapters of the story. And so when we come back, we're going to look at a little bit deeper at some of the other key pieces of this and how wearables are going to affect us moving forward. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AI Today. I'm your host, Dr. Alan Bedeau, and we are talking about wearable devices. We're talking about AI that's embedded in these, wearable, devices that allow it to measure performance, keep track of your locations, a whole bunch of other things all in between. Now, there is an old saying in technology, and it's really that, hardware proposes and software disposes, right? Because the more sophisticated your sensors are, and they're getting pretty sophisticated, they're useless if nothing intelligent is able to interpret what those sensors are detecting. That's why, more sensors, more data. More data, more analysis. More analysis, more, information that can be accumulated about a person. And so for years, wearables have had, sensors on them, but oftentimes they lacked a lot of intelligence, right? Because your fitness tracker could tell your heart rate, your beats per minute. That's great, right? But what does that mean? Is that good? Is it not good? Are you having a great day? Maybe you're having a bad day. Should you do something about it? Should you be concerned about it? Is it compared to my resting heart rate? And it's data overload, like we see oftentimes with, too much sensor data. And so we had to have humans that would provide that interpretation. Well, guess what? We don't have to have that anymore. It's changing. AI is driving this so that you are getting information on demand. And it's not just the information from the wearables. It's the number crunching. It's the conclusions that these are coming up with. And in most cases, the AI is right on the device. So it's instant. It is right at your fingertips. It's real time. It's giving you everything that you need to do something with. Now, when you put that combination together, it is extraordinarily powerful. If you break them apart, AI, of course, is going to continue doing what it wants to do. The basic technologies go back to the, pre 2020-ish, right? That earlier time. But when you start to think about what AI is actually doing on those devices, then it starts to say, hey, we are in a transformation period. AI is transforming raw signal data. Like I said, temperature fluctuations, electrical outputs, those kind of things, into meaningful interpretations that can be acted upon. So think about it. Think about it like this way. So take a heart rhythm analysis. Your smartwatch is going to measure your electrical activity through a whole bunch of different sensors, and essentially it's telling you, it's shining a light on your skin and it's measuring what bounces back, right? That generates a signal, pretty simple, wiggly line, right? You've got noise and you've got some other patterns in there. But, 10 years ago, that signal would have really just went to nowhere. It might have shown up on your chart. It might have, you could have seen a nice graphic about that, but you couldn't look any deeper into that chart. You couldn't get an interpretation of that information. Now, if you're a medical doctor, that's different, right? But you could interpret that. But if you're a normal person, you're not going to be able to understand that. You couldn't take that and put it into even ChatGPT back then, right? And get an answer. I know that's what a lot of folks are doing. So now, though, all this stuff is running right on those devices and it's letting you take a look at that signal in real time. It's looking for, like I said, atrial fibrillation, premature, heart contractions, a lot of those things that, you couldn't do. And now when it detects something that could be concerning, it'll tell you, hey, your heart rhythm shows that signs of AFib. You should consult a doctor. That's pretty good. And that transformation, though, now it's becoming insight. It's giving you signals and it's making recommendations for you. It's, it can happen continuously too, and you don't have to have any expertise. Ease of use, right? Very easy. That's what we all want. Now, start going down the rest of your body again, like we talked about. The exact same principle applies. Sleep, stress, activity, all of those things allow you to say, you know what? I'm gonna track a certain piece of my lifestyle, and I'm going to try to figure out how I can improve it, or at least figure out what my baseline is. They even have, fall detection for, some, folks that are prone to falling, right? Because that ability to say, you know what, a person has fallen, they need help. That's huge. The lifeline, right? Remember the lifeline button that yeah, folks would wear around their neck, or the cat might push when it's sitting on the counter or something like that. You can get away from that. Now it can automatically call emergency services as well. And that information is fantastic. That's great, right? Because that's what we want. We want to help people. We want to take AI. We want to integrate it into something that is going to make our lives better. It's going to process data so much faster than we're used to. But here's the line in the sand, though. It cannot be just about speed. It can't. And it can't be just about a decision that it is recommending. It also has to be about privacy. Okay. If your health data never leaves the device, that's great. The AI interprets it right there for you. All that sensitive information, if it stays on your device, wonderful. That's not happening. It's all going into a server, somebody's server, going out through the internet, connecting to that server. And if a breach happens, somebody has your information. And when you start talking about these devices, right, you're going to hear a lot of terms. You're going to hear AI edge, you're going to hear edge computing, edge network, all those things. But they all are taking that wearable device and they're sending it to a centralized location, which is using it to train more models, but also keeping your personal information in many cases. Now, Apple has been pretty aggressive when it comes to being able to look for, to optimize what some of their AI models are doing. Because, when you're putting it on smaller devices, there's a lot of challenges that come along with that. And that can have some impacts too, right? Because you're trying to put a smallest chip in there and run AI at the edge. It's not optimal, and you can have, overheating. You can have an awful lot of things that will come out of that. Now, let's start looking at the eyes too, right? Your glasses with the camera on your face. Yes, I'm going to get a little closer, make my head look a little bit bigger. Yes, you can see the shininess on the forehead. That's a great. Now, if I wanted to take a picture of myself doing that, it's just that simple. I just did. Just took a picture. Many of you may not have even seen me do that if I wouldn't have been telling you that I was going to do that. I could send it to AI and have the AI interpret that. Maybe a scene, maybe what's behind me, you know, what sort of hand movements am I having, those kind of things. But if you're having a conversation with somebody and you're taking their picture, boy, that's not cool. That can be a problem. Eye tracking. Where are you looking? What are you focused on? You know, what kind of information can you get from that? It starts to layer and become almost an assistant in some cases, but it can be very intrusive in others. We've seen a lot of stories out on the internet talking about somebody had a pair of glasses on, and they were videoing something in a situation where it should not be videoed. Schools, for example, gyms, those kind of things. And that's when that whole invasion of privacy issue starts to really turn things up on their heads. Because when you combine a wearable with a technology company that is famous for AI, and you look at some of their ethics plans that go along with that, you start to question an awful lot of things. Where's my data? How's my data being protected? Who's looking out for me? You know, what are they doing with my data? Is it just training, or are they selling it to somebody else? You know, there's a whole bunch of, you know, implications that come along with that, because wearables without AI, they're just a sensor. As it starts to collect data and process numbers, it becomes an intelligent agent. It interprets your condition. It looks at your context. It looks at, you know, your mood, warning signs. It can be a collaborator as opposed to just an instrument. And so as we shift a little bit and we think about that, that's very powerful. It's great to have some of this information. It's great that you're tracking all of your body vitals and all those other things that go along with that. But, you know, honesty and transparency is always at the forefront of the discussions that we're having on this show. And current devices, the AI may be constrained by power, capacity, whatever that is, but it's getting better. It's collecting more, and it's going somewhere that you may not have a clue where it's going. And I want you to think about that, and I want you to think about your trajectory of how many wearable devices you would put on and not, you know, be a little unsettled by it. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to really finish up by talking about how intelligence is intersecting with privacy, it's intersecting with security, and it's intersecting with power. And I want you to think about that think about how that transformation is changing everything and what we want our devices to do and what we don't want them to do. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AI Today. I'm your host, Dr. Alan Bedeau. And for the first three episodes, we talked about really the technology piece and the implications around that. And I am, just like everybody else, excited for new toys to play with, right? You know, techies, we love these kind of things. If I could wear two pairs of glasses at the same time, I would, just to see how, I could compare them. But now we're talking about a $200 billion market. That is not a niche market anymore. And you've got such diversity in the devices, and you've got how AI is transforming that data into insight and all those other things. Now we got to talk about the sad part about these devices. And that's the worry. That's the risks. That's the questions we all should be asking as this technology weaves itself into our daily lives. Because here is the uncomfortable truth. Every benefit of wearable technologies has a shadow. Every capability creates a vulnerability. Every convenience that they're building into these has a cost. So let's talk about that, because I want to spend some time, some quality time, talking about privacy and digital identity, right? Because that's what I beg you all to protect as much as you can, because those concerns are really acute. It's how much information and the continuous biometric data flow that is coming from your body to these devices is it's every minute of every day if you wear them. Sleep patterns, right? Stress levels, all those things, your location, your activity. You went to Starbucks, your blood chemistry, and even in some cases, who you are with. That data, your digital body, that's what most people are referring it to. It's comprehensive. It is a longitudinal record of your physiological existence. And the depth that that data is beyond any traditional surveillance program that really is out there. We talked about facial recognition before, and we had some fun trying to see if we could confuse it. If it's attached to you, it's a lot harder to confuse. It knows where you are, knows it's your body, knows how it's reacting. So ask yourself, who has access to that digital body of mine? Well, the device manufacturer does. The application developers do. Maybe your employer, if they provide your device as or incentivize its use. Could be your health insurance company. Maybe you're enrolled in a wellness program and it's tracking your information. Could be your life insurance company. Maybe, I don't know, maybe there's a discount that they offer on sharing your health data. That's pretty concerning. When you start to add up all those, you start to see, geez, I'm protecting my digital identity, but everything is out there now. Everybody can get access to it. There's data flows that go from there to there to there to there. It's stored on servers. With security practices, you have no idea what those are. So there are, some things, some worrisome activities that are taking place, especially as we are trying to do a better job of protecting your digital identity, and hackers are using AI to spoof things and to do stuff like that. Imagine them getting your health data, your health information. And these data breaches are happening all the time, right? Because what was it in 2023, I think it was, where one of the, I won't say the name, one of the fitness tracking companies had exposed, 30 million user records. And that wasn't even through a sophisticated hack. Let's be honest. It really was a misconfigured database. And 30 million work habits, workout habits, or sleep data, or your heart rate history, or your location was exposed to anyone that knew where to look. That's concerning. It's very concerning, because it's not about the abstract. It's about being able to, manage and prevent either risks of discrimination, risks of manipulation, risks of spoofing, AI spoofing. And these are things that are happening right now. You know, as employees are, you know, trying to, you know, right size, I would say, and they're looking at screening job candidates based on, you know, wearable data, that really should send up some flags. It's not overtly, I haven't seen it happen overtly yet, but it's starting to get out there where some are looking at stress levels. Some are looking at, you know, sleep quality. Oh, are they going to be prepared to come in and give me a solid 8-hour day? I don't know when the last 8-hour day you had, but I haven't had one in a long time. And when you think about that, you're like, oh, is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it showing that I'm committed? Is it, you know, this or is it that? You know, quite honestly, you get to the point where it's like, it's nobody's business. So imagine though, your insurance company is going to look at your premium and they're going to adjust it based on your real-time behavior. Boy, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? Your health insurance rate goes up. Because your wearable device shows that you spent 3 hours at a bar last night. Maybe your life insurance gets a little more expensive because your heart rate variability is declining over the past 6 months. You know, maybe you're getting, you know, on an exercise program and your fitness is getting better, right? I don't know if it's going to go down. Haven't seen that. But those are the things that you have to think about. These are not, you know, I tell you guys, I'm trying to be honest. I'm trying to keep things as transparent as I can. These are not paranoid fantasies like we talk about. These are logical endpoints that are taking place right now, and the current trajectories are something that we should be, you know, prepared for, understand. The data exists, and the incentives, to use it also exist. And so the only question really is what is preventing that misuse? And if you don't know the answer to that, and quite honestly, not many people do, then your security has to become much more, I guess a good word would be locked down than you are used to doing. Tracking. All of those kind of things. Having a track record of wearable devices is, it's great if it, like we said, it doesn't leave, but you know, having the whole industry and having all of that data out there, that can be a problem. And your attack surface from, we see it all the time, right? From hacking different you know pacemakers, for example. That was an insider type thing, but we have seen though what happens when security can fail, and it can be, you know, you can turn a whole, you know, demographic or an entire population that is wearing these kind of things into, you know, almost into lab rats, because you can inject health data, bad health data. You can manipulate information that is out there that can really scare or not scare, depending on what way you're trying to do. You know, the person using it. And, you know, as it really starts to hone in on the medical device community, we want to make sure that it's just high, it's just regulated. You're not going to hear me say that word very often, but in this case, regulation is something that is going to be vital, because it's easy to put them in a watch and say that it's, oh, you know, sometimes they can get the data wrong, or the AI may do this, or the AI might do that, but that's a shortcut, and I think that's a cheap shortcut for folks. So, looking at that, looking at the transparency of information that the company is providing to you is always going to be important, but also making sure that whoever has your health data, whatever algorithms that they are using, if you can't inspect that, and if you can't understand how the model was trained, what kind of data it was trained on, What are its biases? The same questions that we ask for everything else, you have to ask for wearable devices as well. Is it a false positive, for example? Well, that's kind of important. You know, is your heart back to normal? Is that a false positive? I don't know. You know, I know that the FDA is doing a lot of things associated with that, and they're trying to bring some sanity into this space. But like everything else, AI is going so fast. These wearable devices are being equipped with AI at a rate that we haven't seen, you know, really since the smartphone device took off. So I want you to think about this, though, from a concern perspective that, you know, we are under continuous surveillance. And when you have a whole bunch of wearables on, that's self-surveillance, right? And, you know, if you think about the Hawthorne effect, and if you're not familiar with that, you can look it up, but it's really, just to boil it down, it's really, you know, people change their behaviors because they know they're being observed. So you act one way because you know that you're being observed. Well, with a wearable, are you changing it? Are you hoping that it has an effect on your own life? Because you're tracking yourself. Does that change how you're doing? Does that change how you're living your life? Does that change how often that you're interfacing with that thing? Well, you know, a lot of people think that it does. It can motivate healthier behavior. Close all your rings. That was my favorite one. You know, working out, close all your rings. Get your steps, get your heart rate up, get all these other things, and you make sure you get your sleep score. Never got the sleep score one in 5 years. Never got it. But that can also become a compulsion. It can force you to do things that are unnatural. It'll, you know, really, you know, I would say maybe you don't enjoy going for a run as much as you used to because, well, you're now living by numbers and a device. How you prioritize those things and what your experience is does not change just because you're wearing it. Looking at those kind of things, looking at what the outcomes are, looking at what you want your information to look like, your digital body that is out there, is something that we're just going to have to adjust to and to continue to deal with. But I don't want people to think that it's any different than all the other AI that we're talking about. The risks are real. The privacy erosion is real. The security vulnerabilities, they are real. The asymmetries, the discrimination potential, all of that stuff is real. And as it's going on, we are normalizing surveillance. It's not hypothetical. It's already taking place. And my hope is that you now are better equipped to participate in those activities that you want to, and now you have choices. You can ask the right questions, what products you want to buy. I hope that you can advocate for protections that you believe in. And really, I want you to see the promise and understand the perils all at the same time, because you know, I use wearable devices. A lot of people I know use them. We love them. We play with them. We get some information out of them. But they don't drive what we're doing. And we monitor our personal information that gets out there. And so, you know, if technology and these smart wearable devices are going to just be part of your daily lives, then, you know, the only question is on what terms? And that's something that I can't answer. And so as Christmas is here, you know, ask that question for yourself. What are the terms? And what am I willing to put out there? Because it's out there. So I hope everybody was able to get some understand the devices a little bit quicker. As always, feel free to send me questions and emails. I love them. And build the show, you know, the shows around those. And we will be back next week with another great show. So thank you for stopping by, and we'll see you next week.